Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, National Geographic explains why dogs are so friendly. We'll learn the difference between dogs and wolves. And could your cat's cough be asthma? We'll start with this. Published in National Geographic, Carrie Arnold explains, why are dogs so friendly? Science finally has an answer. Our pet canines have alterations in their genes that make them more sociable than wolves, a new study says. To Bridget Von Holt's 11-month-old English sheepdog, Marla, the entire world is a friend she's yet to meet. She's hypersocial. I even had her genotyped, Von Holt admits, somewhat sheepishly. Von Holt's interests is no casual curiosity. The Princeton evolutionary biologist and her colleagues have spent the last 3 years studying the underlying genetic basis for social behavior in dogs and wolves. Studies have shown that dogs are more sociable than wolves raised in similar circumstances, generally paying more attention to humans and following our directions and commands more effectively. Von Holt's background in evolutionary genetics made her wonder about the potential genetic basis for these differences. Their July 19, 2017 study in Science Advances provides an intriguing clue. Hypersocial dogs like Marla carry variants of two genes called GTF21 and GTF21RD1. Deletion of those genes in people causes Williams syndrome, which is characterized by elfin facial features, cognitive difficulties, and a tendency to love everyone. Von Holt suspects that the gene variants in dogs inhibit their normal function, leading to some issues seen in humans with Williams syndrome. We may have bred a behavioral syndrome into a companion animal, she says. A sexy question? Since evolving from a shared ancestor with wolves at least 10,000 years ago, domestic dogs have helped us find food and protected us from becoming dinner ourselves, all while providing a friendly face and a wagging tail. Understanding how our best friends, from Chihuahua to Mastiff, became what they are today is a sexy question, according to Karen Overall, a canine behavior expert at the University of Pennsylvania, who wasn't involved in the new study. In 2010, in collaboration with Monique Udell, an animal behaviorist at Oregon State University, Von Holt searched the dog and wolf genomes and identified alterations in the WBSCR17 gene that occurred during dog domestication, results they published in Nature. Their project lay dormant until 2014, when Von Holt and Udell secured funding to set up a new set of experiments with 18 dogs of various breeds, including Dachshunds, Jack Russell Terriers, and Bernese Mountain Dogs, and 10 wolves habituated to humans. The scientists trained all of the animals to open a box that contained a piece of sausage. Then they asked the canines to open the box, while in three separate situations: with a familiar human present, with an unfamiliar human, and alone, without a person at all. In all three scenarios, the wolves outperformed the dogs by a large margin. That margin got even larger when the dogs had to open the box in the presence of people. It's not that they couldn't solve the puzzle, they were just too busy looking at the humans to do it, Von Holt says. Dogs still evolving. For the new study, Von Holt conducted additional genetic analysis of the part of the genome surrounding the altered WBSCR17 gene in a larger sample of dogs and wolves. Besides confirming her initial findings that WBSCR17 varied in dogs and wolves, she found two nearby genes, GTF21 and GTF21RD1, were also different. The combination of the genetic and behavioral data told Von Holt that changes to this region of the genome helped turn wolves into human-loving dogs. the University of Pennsylvania's Karen Overall, cautions that the study size was small, which limits the strength of the findings, but she praised the strength of the genetic analysis. We're now selecting for dogs that are easy keepers, that can spend long periods of time in small apartments, Overall states. We're actively changing dog behavior every single year. From Catsters, Ask a Vet. Why do cats cough? Dr. Eric Barkus, yes, Barkus, says, every cat coughs some, but long-term frequent coughing can be a sign of a serious problem. We all know that coughing is because we've all done it. A perceived tickle, irritation, or pain in the throat causes a violent, noisy exhalation. Cats cough too. It is normal to cough every now and then. Occasional transient irritation of the trachea or windpipe, throat, or lungs can cause an intermittent cough in humans or cats. Coughing is common during meals as well. If a fragment of food starts to go down the wrong pipe, a few strong coughs eject it and protect the lungs from its entry, which would lead to pneumonia. Every cat coughs occasionally, but certain individuals cough more often. Some of them cough regularly throughout their lives at a rate that is not normal. What are the potential causes for this? People with significant canine experience know that heart disease is a common cause of coughing in dogs. Cat owners should know that feline heart disease rarely causes coughing. Could a hairball be the cause of a cat's frequent coughing? Absolutely not. Let's clear something up right from the start. Hairballs do not cause coughing. No doubt the term coughing up hairballs was invented because cats appear to be coughing when they bring them up. But they're not coughing. They're vomiting. Coughing is a function of the respiratory system. Coughing occurs if there is irritation or pathology in the throat, voice box, airways, or lungs. Hairballs do not develop in the respiratory system. They develop when hair that is swallowed does not pass normally through the gastrointestinal tract. These hairballs may ultimately, with much drama and ado, be brought up and expelled through the mouth. But they originate in the gastrointestinal tract, not the respiratory tract, and they are produced through vomiting, not coughing. In cats, it can be hard to differentiate between vomiting and coughing. Both cause the sides to heave and both cause substantial noise. Every cat owner has been awakened by the unpleasant cacophony of a cat vomiting or coughing in the dead of night. How can one tell whether one's cat is coughing or vomiting? The simplest way is to see what comes out after noisy episodes. If food, hairballs, or bile is produced, then your cat is vomiting. If nothing ever comes out, or if only a small amount of mucus or clear foamy liquid is produced, then your cat is probably coughing. Also, coughing generally causes cats to undergo a series of nearly identical chest heaves. Vomiting often causes fibrillating abdominal contractions, followed by generalized heaving. If your cat regularly suffers from noisy episodes and you can't tell whether she's coughing or trying to vomit, then embrace modern technology. Get a video of an episode with your smartphone and take it along with your cat to the vet. Let's say that you've determined that your cat is a regular cougher. What could cause that? To answer the question, we must first differentiate acute coughing from chronic coughing. Previously, normal cats who suddenly start to cough often have respiratory infections. Upper respiratory infections are very common in cats. They often cause coughing, watery eyes, and nasal discharge. Foreign bodies in the throat or more serious lower respiratory infections, infectious bronchitis or pneumonia, also may cause sudden onset of coughing. In older cats, cancer that has spread to the lungs rarely is a cause of sudden onset coughing. However, cats who have long histories of coughing more frequently than average without a sudden onset or increasing trend almost always can be diagnosed with the same condition, feline bronchitis, also known as feline asthma. Granted, certain respiratory infections, heartworm disease, and migration of other parasites through the lungs occasionally cause this type of coughing as well. But in the developed world, such infections and infestations are not as common as feline asthma. Feline asthma, like human asthma, is a condition in which the immune system becomes overactive. The excessive activity is focused on the respiratory tract, leading to chronic inflammation of the pulmonary airways, tubes that conduct air into and through the lungs. It causes swelling and irritation of the airways, which can result in coughing. More troubling, asthma can lead to acute crises. If the swelling of the airways progresses to the point that they swell shut, then life-threatening respiratory distress can occur. Because of this potential, it is important for all owners of regularly coughing cats to have their pets checked out by a vet. Radiographs or x-rays often can confirm the diagnosis. In some cases, more advanced procedures in which fluid is flushed into the lungs and then removed and analyzed are necessary. Heartworm testing, as well as general blood work and tests for other parasites, will likely be recommended. Treatment of feline asthma is focused on reducing coughing and improving quality of life, and also especially on preventing life-threatening crises. The most basic treatment is avoidance of allergens that can stimulate the immune system and exacerbate the irritation in the airways. Fleas always are the number one allergen in cats, so good flea control should be implemented even in cats who do not have visible flea infestations. Dietary modification and avoidance of environmental allergens such as mites and pollen may help as well. A number of medications are used to treat significant feline asthma. Immune system modulators such as prednisolone, a type of steroid, and cyclosporin are often used. Injectable steroids such as Depo-Medrol are used for some cats who do not tolerate oral medications. However, owners of cats with asthma should be aware that steroids, especially of the injectable variety like Depo-Medrol, have the potential to cause significant adverse effects in the long run. Bronchodilators such as terbutaline and albuterol are sometimes administered orally to cats with asthma, but the use of bronchodilators alone generally is not recommended by experts. In my experience, the most effective treatment for confirmed cases of feline asthma is fluticasone propionate, also known as Flovent, and much easier to pronounce. It is an inhalable steroid that acts directly on the airways but has minimal systemic effect. It is thus generally less likely to cause side effects than oral or injectable steroids. And surprisingly, it's generally not hard to administer. Vets can obtain an item known as a spacer that can be used to connect the Flovent puffer to the cat. Cats generally tolerate administration of Flovent better than oral medications, and for many cats, a couple of puffs each week is all that is needed to control the condition. If your cat is a regular cougher, she should see the vet for an exam and the tests mentioned above. Coughing has the potential to progress to life-threatening respiratory distress, and it's best to identify and treat the cause before things get out of hand. From Rover.com, Wolf versus Dog, What's the Difference? By Heather Logue. Though it's sometimes hard to believe, our modern canine friends are related to wolves, most closely to the gray wolf. The two species are thought to share a common extinct wolf ancestor. Unlike dogs and foxes, wolves and dogs can reproduce, creating the controversial wolf dog. But they're definitely two different species. So, what are the major differences between wolves and dogs? Let's read on for all the reasons that these animals are distinct from one another and why we should appreciate them both. Dogs versus wolves. Appearance. The obvious place to start is with appearance. Wolves' heads are much larger in comparison to their body size than dogs' heads are. But even though their heads are big, their chests and hips are narrow, and they have long legs and big paws. All of these help them in the wilderness, where it can get pretty rough, and those huge paws help them run long distances at really high speeds. Dogs, on the other hand, generally have wider hips and chests and much shorter legs. They bob around more when they run versus the wolf, who is smooth and sneaky. They also have very different paws. They also have very different jaws, which makes sense considering their diets. Wolves need big, strong jaws to crush bones, while our house canines just need to make sure they can chew their kibble and gnaw on their toys. Weirdly enough, they do have the same amount of teeth, 42, even though the domesticated dog's teeth are quite a bit smaller. Eye color is another trait that wolves and dogs don't share. Dogs have eyes that range in color from blue to brown. Wolves, on the other hand, always have eyes that are shades of yellow or amber, but never brown. Their coats are also unique. Dog coats can be all kinds of colors, whereas wolf coats are generally white, black, gray, or brown, because they depend on camouflage for survival. Wolf tails are very straight, and those giant paws have two extra large front toes, which are webbed to help with swimming and wandering through the snow. Dog versus wolf behavior. The way that dogs and wolves interact with the world, and especially with humans, is very different. Our canine buddies are generally social and view us as family. They'll even learn how to read and understand our expressions. Wolves are tight with the family units they form early on, but they're definitely not accepting of strangers and will never look to humans for affection or guidance. They're far too independent for that. Much research has been done lately about the different ways that dog puppies and wolf puppies develop, and it has been discovered that dogs are slower to develop and don't open their eyes or socialize as early as their wolf counterparts, at 4 weeks versus the wolf's 2 weeks. Also, wolf pups are only born in the spring so that they can become stronger and sturdier before facing winter. Domesticated female dogs can have puppies any time of year. Can wolves become pets? In a word, no. Both dogs and wolves can be somewhat trained, though a wolf can never be domesticated. Why? Because domestication is the result of years of breeding. A recent study does show that wolves raised by humans can become attached to those humans, but they never replicate the behavior of domesticated dogs. The lead author of the study cautions people that wolves should remain wild animals. Both diggers. Dogs and wolves both like to get vocal, although wolves tend to howl rather than bark, like dogs do. Both also dig holes, although for the wolf, this is how they look for food, make a den for their pups, and find a cool spot during scorching hot months. Their diets aren't exactly on par. Wolves are carnivores and subsist mostly on animals like deer, moose, and buffalo. They'll eat smaller birds and mammals, but they prefer bigger, meatier game. Dogs also love meat, but they've learned to be more open to the variety of foods their humans offer them. It's clear that there are a plethora of differences between domestic dogs and their wild friends out in nature. Though wolves are fascinating and majestic creatures, they remain out of our reach. And there's nothing like being able to give your canine best friend a cuddle, is there? Here's a study about dogs in winter. It seems it was done in the UK, but if you're in the US or anywhere else, you will likely be able to relate. Grant Bailey writes in The Independent Online, study finds dogs are putting on weight in the winter due to their owners shirking walks in bad weather. Dogs enjoy fewer walks in the winter because their owners don't like going out in the cold, a study has revealed. Research revealed 56% of owners admit their dogs get less exercise when the temperature drops due to dog lovers' reluctance to venture outside. Alarmingly, 1 in 6 admitted they pray for grim weather so they have an excuse to avoid taking their dog for a stroll. As a result, dog owners reckon their pooches get an hour less exercise every week compared to the summer. Sean McCormick, head vet at dog nutrition company Tails.com, based in London, which commissioned the study, said any dog which is living by a nutritious and healthy diet is going to remain as enthusiastic as ever about their daily walks, even as the temperature plummets and the heavens open. When this happens, it's easy to slip into hibernation mode and curl up on the sofa, but we want to encourage dog owners to don their thermals and pick up the lead. Your dog will thank you for it. The study also found 36% of owners have put off taking their dog out for a walk because they felt too tired. And 1 in 5 have found themselves so snowed under with their tasks in their lives, they haven't been able to find the time. 50% of dog owners think they themselves also put on weight in the winter due to inactivity. Of those who have fallen out of shape in the colder months, 58% believe getting out and walking their dog helps to shift the winter pounds faster. In response to the findings, personal trainer and nutritionist Dan Osmond started Doggy Boot Camp, an exercise regime to put dogs and dog owners through their paces, a way to get man and dog pumped up in a tail-wagging workout when the weather gets chilly. Dan Osmond added, "It's cold and dark and wet outside, but your dog still wants to go out and burn off some energy. Dog owners have a responsibility to their four-legged friend to give them the happiest life possible, and sometimes that means going for walks in less than ideal weather conditions. And while the benefits may not be clear at first, it is important to keep exercising with your dog through winter. It may even strengthen the bond between you." The study conducted by One Poll also found 41% of dog owners prioritized a healthy diet above all else to ensure a long and happy life for their dog. And 39% thought regular exercise was the most important factor in maintaining their pooch's well-being. 1 in 2 owners think their dog is happiest right after a good chance to stretch its legs and run around. And 43% found regular exercise helps to keep their dog calm. And almost 9 in 10 reported an improvement to their own mental well-being when they are able to get out with their dog regularly. Here's an update on flying with your pet. I'll call this the peacock incident. Since Delta Airlines announced on January 19, 2018, that it was tightening its rules regarding passengers flying with animals, other airlines have announced they are also following suit. On February 1, 2018, CBS News filed this report. United Airlines changed policy on comfort animals after peacock incident. Dallas. United Airlines wants to see more paperwork before passengers fly with emotional support animals and don't even try to bring a peacock on board. The airline announced Thursday it will tighten rules starting March 1st. The changes are similar to those coming at Delta Airlines. United said owners will have to confirm that their animal is trained to behave in public, and they will need a vaccination form signed by a veterinarian. The vet will have to vouch that the animal isn't a health or safety threat to other people. United has seen a 75% year-over-year increase in customers bringing emotional support animals on board and has experienced a significant increase in onboard incidents involving these animals, the airline said in a statement. We understand that other carriers have seen similar trends. The Department of Transportation's rules regarding emotional support animals are not working as they were intended, and we need to change our approach in order to ensure a safe and pleasant travel experience for all our customers. The airline bounced a passenger on Sunday who showed up at the airport with a peacock for emotional support. New York City-based photographer and performance artist Ventico said she bought a ticket for her peacock, Dexter, so he would have his own seat on Sunday's flight from New Jersey's Newark Liberty International Airport to Los Angeles. United already bans exotic animals and non-household birds. Still, the fact that a passenger tried to bring a peacock on board helped illustrate why we needed to revise our policy, United spokesman Charles Hobart said. Guide dogs have been occasional flyers for years, but recently there has been a surge of emotional support animals. Federal regulations allow them, if they're not too big or exotic, but airlines can ask for a doctor's note verifying that the passenger needs the animal. Airlines are convinced that SCAF laws abuse the rules. Passengers often have to pay $125 or more each way to bring a small pet on board, but comfort animals fly free. The crackdown by Delta raised objections from service dog owners. Janine Stanley of the Guide Dog Foundation for the Blind is upset that Delta will require service dog owners to file a health form at least 48 hours before flight. That could make emergency trips impossible. I don't think I've ever filled out a form for assistance. Now, my animal is going to have to be verified every time, she said. United said it will not require forms for trained service animals. It's unclear, however, what would stop someone from claiming their comfort animal is a trained service animal. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, AFA, a union, has praised United's announcement, saying the airline has taken a very thoughtful, responsible approach to this issue, CBS's news Chris Van Cleve reports. The airline's increased requirements for emotional support animals will reduce fraud and protect the legitimate need of animal assistance for passengers with disabilities. And veteran Sarah Nelson, international president of AFA, said Thursday in a statement, "This is about maintaining safety, health, and security for passengers and crew, while ensuring accessibility for those who need it." And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. Thanks for listening. And please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.